Now, across Beds, Hearts and Bucks, there are some amazing people. You know that because you're one of them. However, some people are finally being recognised in our area on the Queen's New Year's Honours list. And one of those people is Liz Pryor, and she is the Chief Exec of the Anne Robson Trust. I mean, this is an amazing honour. Welcome to the show, Liz, and congratulations.
Thank you so much, Bab. That's really kind of you.
Wow.
Thank you for inviting me today.
You're so welcome, Liz. I mean, first of all, I want to ask you, before we get into how the Anne Robson Trust started and why, I just wanted to ask, have you had to keep it an absolute secret for months and months and months?
Well, yes and no. So I had to keep it a secret for about a month.
About a month. Oh, so not too bad.
No, around the beginning, end of November, beginning of December, I got an email and I squeaked a bit. And my husband happened to be in the kitchen at the time, and I did share it with him because I couldn't actually believe what I was seeing. And we were both sworn to secrecy, and we didn't tell anybody else at all, actually, until New Year's Eve.
Oh. Gosh, that is so
exciting.
Yeah, and that, I love that. I squeaked.
You know, you just go, what's an email from the cabinet office? Huh?
Yeah, but exciting. And also, was there a moment where you thought, is this a wind-up? Is this real?
You think, there's an email from the cabinet office, and you think, really?
Yeah.
And then you open it, and there's a letter attached to it, and then it starts, and you think, oh, actually, I think this might be real. Bizarre, completely bizarre, and all very surreal. Still is a bit, actually.
Now, Liz Pryor, MBE, member of the British Empire.
How mad is that?
I know, it rolls off the tongue very nicely, Liz, actually.
Oh, thank you, Bab. That's kind.
Now, the Anne Robson Trust. Now, I know Anne was your mum, wasn't she?
Indeed, she was, yeah.
Now, what happened to her in kind of 2010? What happened to your mum?
Well, long story short, she was living in a care home in Suffolk where she lived. She was unable to live at home with a carer because she needed two people to help her out of her chair. So she went to this nursing home, lovely care home, and actually enjoyed it rather more than she thought she was going to, I think. Unfortunately, she just had her first Christmas there and she fell out of bed one morning. It wasn't the care home's fault. She always refused to have sides on her bed, and she fully said, it's my fault. I should have put the sides on, but I didn't. She fell out of bed. She was admitted to hospital. They thought she'd got a broken hip. It was a bit of a disaster from the moment she arrived, if I'm really honest, Bab. My sister, who lived just up the road, was away because these things always happen at the most annoying,
Yeah, of course they do.
So I travelled over from Hertfordshire to Suffolk to be with Mum in A&E and spent the day with her. And they finally decided to admit her that hospital had norovirus, which is that horrible... Horrible sickness and upset tummy virus and at the time. And so I wasn't really allowed into the ward. The whole thing was all a bit of a nightmare. And I completely understand why I wasn't allowed into the ward. But it meant that we couldn't visit Mum. So what happened to her... And then what's happened in the last 18 months, 2 years or so, that there's been so much that I've felt synergy with and that our family has felt sort of very much a deep understanding of what the families have been going through of people with COVID, because they haven't been able to go into hospital and support them and hold their hand and see them. And we weren't able to do that with Mum. So she was then in hospital for a week. She was discharged the following Saturday. And in the words of the nurse that rang me, as bright as a button she was. The ambulance drivers that were driving her home were not told, but they assumed she would have been fast-tracked home to die because they could tell that she was dying. She very sadly died 3 hours after she got home.
But
that was the beginning of this organisation, really. It was just the worst, just awful for Mum.
So she was on her own?
Well, no, I'm one of five. Two of my sisters were actually able to be with her.
Right.
But myself and my two brothers were not, because nobody told us she was dying.
So it
was really not a very nice end. And my father, on the other hand, had died in a quite a long time before that, in 1989. And, I was in my early 20s then, and I... it was the worst thing that has ever happened and will ever happen in my life, you know, I felt. But actually, looking back on it now, with a bit more understanding and experience, I realised that actually Dad had what people would term a good death. You know, he was at home with the sun shining, it was July, we had all the windows open, all of us were there with him, we had amazing Macmillan nurses, and it was about as good as it could be. And Mum's, I'm afraid, was about as bad as it could be, I think.
It's such a heartbreaking situation, this. So did you then think, I don't want this for other families, this kind of end-of-life care, because it was all very haphazard. And yes. did you sort of think, right, I'm going to take our experience and do something positive with it?
Well, sort of, but it didn't really happen quite like that, in that straight after Mum died, I was absolutely incensed with fury.
Yeah.
That this could happen to my mother, angry actually probably is a better word. And I spent quite a long time working with the coroner and working with my mother's GP and the nurse, senior nurse at her care home, to try and work out what had happened to Mum. And we spent quite a lot of time talking to the hospital board of directors and chief executive. And then I got involved with an organisation called the Patients Association, which was set up by Claire Rayner. And she set up this organisation, and it's really to give patients a voice. And they really supported me and our family. And they asked me to write the story up, so which yeah. I did, because I spent quite a lot of time making notes of, you know, all the way through it. And they used Mum's story in one of their annual reports. And that allowed me, they then asked me to be media spokesperson for that report, which right. allowed me a sort of soapbox, bad, if yeah. you will, you know, a voice to shout about how incensed I was and how angry I was and how it shouldn't happen and how disgraceful everything is. And so I did that, and I went from being a housewife and mum to talking to John Humphreys on Radio 4
wow.
and thinking, my goodness,
gosh.
How me and my big mouth, goodness. So I did all that, and we did lots of telly and lots of radio. I think I spoke to three counties at the time, and we did all sorts of things. And it came to the sort of January after that, so this must have been January 2011. Mm. And I thought, you know, it's no good shouting about how bad everything is and telling everyone how rubbish they are. That's not going to make them better.
No.
That's actually going to drag them down, and it's going to make the good people leave, because there are thousands of good people and brilliant people in the NHS. And it wasn't one person that had done something awful.
No.
It was a systemic problem, really.
Yes.
I think that was when I thought, no, come on, this, I need to be positive now. I can't carry on being negative and miserable and cross, because it just doesn't...
It's destructive, isn't it?
Not constructive at all. So I ended up working with a charity that... actually, we worked in Stevenage, we worked at West Hart and Watford and in lots of other hospitals. And we... We worked with local communities and took in teams of school children, pantomime casts, pets as therapy, all sorts of different things, choirs, anything you could think of to lift spirits and raise, just make an elderly care ward in a hospital a nicer place. Then I left that charity and I started working for the director of nursing at the Lister in Stevenage, and she asked me to look at end-of-life care. And myself and two wonderful palliative care nurses set up a team of volunteers who supported patients and their families who were dying. And we quickly realised how fantastic it was and how simple, really. All you were doing really was putting a human being next to another human being who was dying. And it was really, really powerful, Babs, and it made a huge difference to masses of people, not only the patients and their families, but staff, you know, absolutely loved it and were constantly saying, you know, I don't know what we did without these volunteers. They're just brilliant. I want to be able to sit with my patient, but I just can't because I've got 12 other people to look after.
Yeah. Yeah, and that just human contact with someone.
Indeed.
And that you've not been forgotten, and you can I don't know, maybe reminisce, talk about, you know, your life and also recognise that that is still a person, you know.
Yeah, with a history and a family.
Absolutely. And great experiences. And I know, having done a little bit of volunteering in an old people's home and done a bit of reminiscence work and been fascinated by, you know, the book of someone's life and then wanting to talk about it and how little opportunity they got, because, you know, it's like you're a fresh pair of ears, you're not a carer, you haven't got to, you know, go around and clean loads of stuff and sit and talking to. I remember talking to a lady and she'd been a ballerina and it was amazing, you know, telling me all about her life and dancing around the world. I loved it.
It's amazing what comes out of the woodwork, isn't it?
Yeah.
And actually, these volunteers, as you've just said, you just touched on, they've got time.
Yeah.
They're not rushing off to do something else. They're not sort of standing half walking away and half talking. They're sitting, giving that person 100% of their attention, and that's worth so much, I think. So I ended up leaving the Lister to set up a charity to help other hospitals set up teams of these volunteers, and amazingly, that's what we did. I don't think they thought I would, and I'm, to be perfectly honest, there were times when I didn't think I would as well. We got our charity registration in May 2018. And I think by the time the pandemic hit, we were working with 5 hospitals across the east of England, with 5 more ready to go. And unfortunately, COVID came and that whole house of cards fell down.
But you set up your charity, the Anne Robson Trust, and this is what you're being recognised for. You named it after your mum. That's why you've got your MBE, because of something that was heartbreaking, you've turned into something that is helping other people. And Liz, that's amazing.
Well, thank you. That's so kind of you. I must say now, though, I'm sharing the warm glow with all the amazing people that have helped get us where we are now.
Yeah.
It's not just me. There have been so many people. I've got an amazing team of people working with me now. Amazing volunteers on our helpline, because we set up a helpline in response to COVID to support anybody who's dying or whose loved ones or friends or colleagues are dying.
Where can people find out information, Liz? I was thinking of a website.
Our website is www.annwithane, that's A-N-N-E, Robson, R-O-B-S-O-N, Trust. .co.uk, I beg your pardon.
Right, so yes. If you're sitting listening to this and you're in a position where you think, I could do with Liz and her volunteers help, Anne Robson Trust, go and have a look at it. And Liz, it's amazing. And I totally get why you're on the New Year's Honours list. What a blooming hero. Thank you, Liz.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye, thank you.